Ms. Ostapenko has no challenges remaining.
Welcome to No Challenges Remaining. I'm Ben Rothenberg, joined by longtime friend of the show, Andrew Eccles. Andrew, hello.
Hello, Ben. How are you doing?
Doing very well. And this is a highly anticipated episode for both of us. And for hopefully for listeners, we teased it a couple times on the show. We are going to be talking on this episode about the new movie coming out next week, as of when we're recording this, comes out April 26th in the U.S., Challengers, directed by Luca Guadagnino, written by Justin Kuritsky's, and starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist in this three-handed love triangle tennis movie. So very excited to talk to you about this. And there's been, you know, we did, you reminded me, when we were setting up the show, we plan on doing an NCR-like movie club series during the pandemic that got maybe a couple episodes done, and hopefully would do more. It can still be a sporadic thing. I think we recorded an episode about the Wimbledon movie.
Yeah, the Lost Wimbledon episode.
Yeah, which is out there somewhere. I'll go looking for it. It would still be on my computer somewhere, I think.
It was a thrilling conversation about a very mediocre movie, and I'm offended that it's not out there in the world after I spent so much time revisiting Kirsten Dunst and Sam Neill and that other guy who's the main guy. I don't know who he is.
Yeah, exactly. But so that was an older movie, and for a while, Wimbledon, the movie, was kind of the only tennis movie out there. Of any sort of, you know, major release renown. But since then, there's been a glut of tennis movies in the last few years, and like really sort of like Oscar-worthy, Oscar bait, you could call them, tennis movies, including King Richard, probably most famously, which was a Best Picture nominee and did win the Best Actor Oscar for Will Smith. There was also Battle of the Sexes a couple years before that about Billie Jean King, starring Emma Stone, who got an Oscar nomination for her role in that movie as well. And then those are the big two, I think, for sure. Mm-hmm. And a couple years before that, there was also a Swedish movie that got some circulation. I think it's actually pretty good. I don't think many people saw it, but called Borg McEnroe, or sometimes just Borg if you're in Sweden, which I think is funny, starring Shia LaBeouf as John McEnroe, which is also a very sort of art house tennis movie. I guess I want to start with sort of putting Challengers in context of that sort of recent collection of output from Hollywood. This movie to me is actually maybe closest thematically in some ways to the 2005 movie Match Point, mm-hmm. in terms of using tennis as a jumping off point for more sort of psychological drama, thrillery kind of stuff almost at times. But I think also this movie also very much exists on the tour as a milieu. It's about active pro tennis players competing. I'll start with you there. Like, where do you think this movie, for people who've seen other tennis movies, where would you sort of want to start expectations for where this movie fits into that?
Yeah, I mean, I think tennis is obviously very central to it. Like, I don't think it's only using tennis as a jumping off point. Like, I would say that there are details of life on tour that are like really important to this. And I do feel like the sport is very much at the center of the story. I think it's sort of free from the restraints that are put on something like a King Richard or a Battle of the Sexes, like anything that's a biopic, basically, that has to stay to some kind of like formal structure. I think the really fun thing for me about Challengers was that it wasn't like held back by that. They were able to have fun because these are fictional characters, and they were able to, I think, take things a little bit further. And honestly, like, tell a few more truths than you maybe could in a biopic. So I think it was really fun in that way. And like for me, it was my favorite like trip to a theater to see a tennis movie. I had a lot more fun here than I've had watching kind of those biopics. Although I am actually quite a fan of Battle of the Sexes. I thought that was quite good. But I think that this one is much more for people who like films. You know, like I think it's just like a lot more. There's a lot more artistic license being taken here, which is really fun.
I completely agree. I think that's one of the things I like most about this movie compared to those others. I have the same note, that is that it's fictional. I mean, so many times when you're watching a biopic or a sort of historical event movie, I think especially in the last like 10 years of cinema, it can feel like a rehash of a Wikipedia page in a lot of ways. Like you're just sort of going through facts, and it's like semi-educational, telling you what happened. And it's like sort of for people who didn't want to read the book or do the homework, they give you this movie that's mostly true. And that's how you learn about the history. And that's a genre of movies that's all across, you know, cinema currently, and with mixed success. Sometimes it can be very formulaic. Sometimes it can obviously be Oscar winning and give great acting performances in those, but I think it is very limiting in a certain way. I'm thinking of, and it can be very paint by numbers. I'm thinking of, what was the movie? It was called like Dumb Money or something. It was about
the
the GameStop. I saw that in theaters for free as it happened last fall. And that was a movie that really just felt to me like, and I like Paul Dano and who starred that movie and a couple of actors in it. But like, I was like, this movie is like just reading a magazine article. Like, it's very like, there's not much cinematic creativity happening here. And I really liked what you said about how being fictional allows you to hit bigger truths, because you're allowed to kind of fully flesh out things like Battle of the Sexes, for example. I think it's kind of really held back as a movie, as a structure of a movie, because the actual match that happens between Billy and Bobby in the end is actually not very close or compelling. It's a straight sets win for Billy, and it's sort of almost an anticlimax, as it was in real life in certain ways, but that's just what, you know, the movie allows. But this right. movie is both sort of grounded in a real enough world that tennis fans can recognize and appreciate, and can learn things about some real thematic things that do go on in the real world of tennis, while at the same time having this very obviously imagined and full and rich and lush and scandalous story around it in a way that, I think the emotions, I think, are largely real in this way that I think fiction allows for.
It's just fun. Like, it's just actually a fun movie-going experience. It's a movie-going experience where you actually don't know what the ending is, like you do in Battle of the Sexes or King Richard, if you know anything about tennis.
Yeah.
Like, this is actually a more cinematic story, and it's made that way. You know, it's made by a very, like, you know, Luca Guadagnino makes very cinematic pictures. And I think that, you know, it's not like a big-name actor going for an award. It's three kind of young upcoming movie stars who are like kind of the future of Hollywood, just like getting to have a lot of fun and stretch their muscle, and that was just like really refreshing as a tennis fan who's also a movie fan, to just be like, oh, they understand that tennis can be cinematic. Like, it can be, it is fun, it is energetic. And that was just honestly, I feel an overwhelming sense of relief that this was good, because I'm not generally a fan of biopics, and this is just so much more.
Yeah, and I think, right, it's this time that tennis can be tense, can be romantic, can be sexy. There's lots of sexiness and steaminess in this movie that we'll get into. And those are all sorts of things that the other, obviously King Richard's about, you know, a father and daughters. It's not really trying to be sexy on any level. Battle of Sexes has a love scene early on, a big one between Billy and Marilyn. Who winds up being her sort of mistress, I guess you would say, girlfriend in that movie. And yeah, but that kind of is there and it's left. And it does have elements of that. But I do think that this is a sort of a tennis movie inhabited by human beings in this real way. And that was refreshing. Let me just get a bit into the structure of it here to tell people. This is me, a non-spoilery podcast. We might add some spoilers at the very end, potentially, but most are going to try to be non-spoiler and anything that really gives away plot details that you wouldn't be able to tell from a trailer or like, you know, a paragraph summary of it, but we'll get into some of the actual details of tennis that are not plot specific for satisfaction of this tennis audience. The movie centers around basically the final of a challenger event, ATP challenger event in 2019. I think it says it takes place in New Rochelle, New York, sponsored by Phil's Tire Town. That is a fictional event, but plausible event. There has been a challenger. There was one in Binghamton, New York, for a bunch of years around that time. Not anymore, I don't think, but it's a very plausible sort of setting. It has the sort of one thing I know, I'm sure you noted too, is like they have like the actual logos for like USTA, for ATP Challenger, like all those things are actually real. And there's a lot of like real world elements there. This match is played between two American players, Art Donaldson, played by Mike Feist, and Patrick Zweig, played by Josh O'Connor. Zendaya plays Tashi Duncan, who is a former player and the wife and coach of Art Donaldson. And really, these are the only three characters you need to know in this whole movie. It's very much a three-handed movie there. These three characters have known each other since juniors, which is something I think is also true to life and something maybe we don't cover enough in pro tennis, how relationships and rivalries can date back well before the pro careers, to academies, to juniors, certainly. And how, you know, friends, past and present, and relationships, past and present, current and exes, can all sort of commingle and float around in the same space, and it can feel very crowded or messy in that way. The movie is an interesting sort of mix of these fictional characters with these real places and signals. And like, so the movie mostly exists in the real US Open series of events. Like, they play Atlanta. And when they're in Atlanta, actually, there are some like posters that you can see of like John Isner and Marty Fish holding trophies and like Andy Roddick. Like, so there's this is some sort of real world, but they never actually talk, I don't think, about these players having played in real players. No one's like, oh, back when I beat Federer or anything like that. Like that's kind of almost just wallpaper. So it exists in this like largely real world, but they don't actually do anything to libel or slander or make anything up about real people. US Open is also a tournament up there, and they have junior finals, which we see in a flashback scene, and they happen, there's some good details. Like they happen on the right courts where junior finals actually have taken place, you know, court 13 or whatever it was. As we mentioned in the last podcast, there's a Cincinnati scene, and they go out and eat at Applebee's afterwards, which is a great detail, great fan service. I was actually thinking, like, yeah, they definitely saw like the New York Times article photo of Andrea Lavochkova and her then fiance, I think now husband, Fabrizio, sitting in the booth at Applebee's, and it looks like that photo. So I was going to try to send it to the photographer I worked with in that story, be like, your photo is very much an inspiration for this Zendaya scene. So those are some of the details that it gets, I think, really right. And there's also, you know, small details as well. Like I mentioned before, like they opened the real ATP WTA scoring app, like it used to look. They open, you know, old ATP website player profiles. You see like a screenshot of at one point that looks correct what the ATP website has looked like. Mary Jo Fernandez and Chris Fowler are doing commentary on ESPN, albeit on an early round Atlanta match, which they probably wouldn't be doing. But anyway, still like a lot of things I think that will scratch the itch and like really get a lot of like, oh, things going. There's a lot of markers of authenticity and attention to a lot of details, which I think are, I didn't name all of them, but those are some of the ones, and I don't want to keep going because I've talked too long. But those are some of the things that I caught on to. They were like nice candy for tennis fanatics.
Yeah, no, it was really great. I really liked the attention to detail in that sense. I felt like they really kind of set up the world very, very nicely. Obviously, the Applebee's was really great. There was little things about kind of college tennis versus challenger tennis versus pro, like, you know, US Open and Atlanta and Cincinnati. And I found all of that really, really great. I felt like they'd really taken the care to go and do their research, and the characters felt very lived in. I did laugh when I saw the Andy Roddick and Marty Fish posters and stuff, because in the movie art, Mike Feist's character has won 6 majors. And I was looking at those posters and I was thinking, like, in this world, like, is Andy Roddick like a really minor deal in US tennis because of how big Art Donaldson became? Like, how did those guys fare? You know, like, I'm just like wondering like how history looks at them in this world, because Donaldson's so overshadowed their achievement. So that was kind of fascinating. But no, I really liked the way that there was some kind of real world grounding compared to this otherwise fictional world. And yeah, there is nobody else on screen practically. I mean, there are like 2 or 3 other characters that even have a line compared to like this three-hander movie, which was really fascinating because it's just entirely time spent with these 3 really enigmatic stars. And I really enjoyed just getting to spend that time with these 3 players who all felt very, to me, real to the tennis world, like in terms of their personalities. You know, like Art and Patrick are described as like fire and ice. And they do have these like really vastly different approaches. And like, it was so true to me to the kind of thing that you see on tour, you know, these kind of big boisterous players and these more kind of like reserved kind of characters. I found that really, really interesting.
Yeah. And one thing that I think this movie gets best is also like establishing the stakes of tennis and like the pressures of that. That's, I think, more than we have the tennis action in a bit, but like the tennis, I think they did a really good job establishing the stakes. And I was messaging briefly with Tumani, who went to the London premiere of this movie, not on this episode obviously, but one thing he says, which I thought was really true, is he said, I like that they went out of their way to show that a tennis career can go in many different directions.
Yeah,
and that's totally true, and that's really something that's huge to turn against, something we probably don't talk about enough. It's something I'm happy, like in my Naomi Osaka book, plug there, obligatory, it shows her and her sister going in these different paths in a similar way, like different trajectories. And this movie definitely has these 3 all very promising juniors who then have different fates befall them and different things happen to them within their control, outside of their control, etc., to really change their lives and their trajectories and their fates in this world. And I think they did a really good job of showing that and the tension that can breed in relationships.
The whole setting of the film being centered around this challenger final, when you have these kind of like higher stakes tournaments coming in as well, and this like, you know, obviously major champion at its center, I think was like a really clever way of like lowering the stakes to raise them, you know, like taking this guy who's won 6 majors and putting him in a challenger final. And then they actually do a really good job of explaining you know, like why that is high stakes for him and why it's high stakes in a different way for Patrick. And I thought that that was like really compelling, actually. And that, you know, they kind of discussed this themselves, but like who have more at stake in this match, you know, like just on a, I mean, forget the rest of the plot, just on a tennis like basis, like who is it more important to win this final? And so like, I thought that was really, really smart and really, really true to life. So I really enjoyed that side of it too. That definitely jumped out at me. It's like, oh, this is the first time I really feel real tennis stake kind of portrayed on screen in a way that I connect to.
And the challenger, I think, did a good job of showing a challenger at like a pretty accurate US level. Like it's not like a complete, it's not a dump. Like it's like being held at a country club. Like some, I think the locker room might look a little bit too dumpy, but it was, or too, you know, rough and prisony at times, but we can get into that. It's a nice looking crowd. It's like a small crowd, probably sits less than 1,000 people, but maybe like, I don't know if it's like 300, 400, 500 people in this stands. Imagine that we see like not stands on all sides and people like sitting on a lawn on one side. I love there's like a detail. There's like this character who was a lineswoman at their junior final, who's now like an administrator at the challenger. That's like totally real life. It's a small world in USTA and Tennessee characters. One of the characters who maybe is the fourth biggest character in this movie just by default, because there's not very many characters, is the chair umpire who sits like, it was a choice. He's like a very, like, it's very clearly like gay, like flashily dressed man with dreads and like sunglasses and trying to like posing all the time. There's no person like this on tour right now. But I found him an amusing choice. So that kind of stuff all just felt very, very lived in and real. I'm here to the tennis part. So I do think of these three movies we've discussed, King Richard, Battle of Sexes, and Challengers, they're sort of the three main big tennis movies. I do think the tennis action sequences in this movie are probably the worst in terms of looking like actual tennis. There are just some times where, like, I know people have seen the previews and like the swing. Someone made a joke on Twitter, which I appreciated seeing the clips of, like, it looks like the only player who any of these actors or choreographers have ever watched is Medvedev. Everything is like big and wild, swings everywhere and arms flying everywhere. And there's some, you know, there's some CGI happening for sure in these scenes where like the ball is clearly edited. Sure. And a lot of times, there's one particular point with Zendaya playing where the ball is just going way too fast. Like, it's like they're hitting and the ball's just like, and the ball that doesn't slow down. It doesn't even slow down when it bounces. And it's like, this does not look like real tennis. At the same time, like, as a viewer and even as a tennis, you know, snob, you know, purist, whatever you want to say, I didn't really mind in the context of this movie, because it's like, there's this like big, loud Trent Reznor electronica music playing and everything's just going fast. And like, it's just like the music is wild, this movie. It's like, it all feels like very Bergane, like very just like dance club, like loud electronic music. I wasn't expecting. When it first came on, I was like, what is happening here with this music?
It's like a German fetish club mixed with an episode of Alias. Like,
exactly.
It's so good. Like, I loved the music in this. I'll get back to the tennis in a second. I loved the music in this movie. It's just so like frenetic and like imposing and just like makes its presence known. And they actually really play with like cutting it to silent and then suddenly bringing it back when like a rally starts again. And like, I the whole film, I was like, this soundtrack is, I mean, this just whole thing is a bop. I really liked it. I thought it worked really well actually with the movie. As for the tennis, I mean, the college match, I think that you're referring to Zendaya's college match at Stanford, Tashi's. Yeah, the ball looks terrible there. They do this weird thing where the camera sort of comes halfway up the court and then they have the ball sort of... It doesn't look good. And I that was the one part of the film where I was like, oh, this looks like really badly rendered. I actually thought the tennis looked pretty good the rest of the time. Like the service motions, especially... And I have a piece out where I reference this, but especially the Zendaya and Josh O'Connor's service motions, I think, are really bad. I think Mike Feist of the three of them actually has the best looking tennis. I mean, he is also a dancer, so I feel like he just kind of knows what he's doing there. But like, I felt like his swings looked the most real. But in general, I found the tennis to be really good. And something I actually really appreciated was that, you know, you see these people play, at least Patrick and Art, you see them play as juniors and as pros. And I really appreciated something, which was that when he's a junior, Art's footwork is all over the place. He's like sliding, he's like tripping over himself, he's kind of gangly and skinny anyway, and it kind of looks like a junior trying to run around the court. And then when he's a pro, the footwork is really tidied up, and you can kind of see like, oh, his coach helped him fix it. Like, I thought that was actually really, really clever. Like, they I think had taken care to kind of show that progression without it ever being explicitly referenced. So it doesn't look perfect, but I still thought it looked good. And if nothing else, just the way the camera is moving, I think makes the rallies more dynamic than any of the other films. Like, even if the other films have a bit more reality right. to them.
I meant more like for people, because there are people who are going to go into this movie wanting to judge the tennis. Like, we don't want to judge the strokes, we want to judge the accuracy. I think it's a more fun tennis action sequences than the other ones, in part because it is camp. These big wild swings are happening near the end as the tension sort of crescendos at the end, that you start using these increasingly ridiculous camera angles, and like, which I won't want to spoil too much, but they get sort of wild with the staging of it, the cinematography of it, definitely over the top at times with the choices they make in a lot of those late sequences, but in this way it just feels like surreal and fun in this way. Yeah. I think is authentic. But yeah, I'm just saying there are people of this tennis audience we're talking to who are going to judge this based on, would that shot ever get you a scholarship to Stanford? Like, you know, like, no. But they also do show some layers, like, too. Like, you mentioned the Josh O'Connor's service motion. They do talk about it being wonky. It is like a point of conversation.
It's
like,
a plot point.
You have this weird, which I like, they appreciate that, like, there's different techniques that show different things about people, too.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if you're going to this movie, like, judging it for how accurate, like, Josh O'Connor's backhand is, let it go. Tennis fans, just go and enjoy the movie, because like mostly looks good. I mean, I think one thing that we discussed in the Lost Wimbledon podcast was how every single point seems to end with like a smash and somebody throwing themselves on the ground in that movie. And I was just honestly relieved that like these points don't end like that every single time. There's a couple, but like in the
not
most
really,
part,
though,
lots of people throwing themselves around the court like in Wimbledon. So we're definitely at a higher standard than that.
I totally agree with that. Yeah, it's a variety of points. It's not all the same points. Sometimes maybe rallies are a little bit long sometimes, but you know, there's also like aces and double faults and stuff. And there's a mix of points that happen here. Although really, like, again, this is not a tennis movie. This is not ultimately a tennis movie made for tennis fans, as much as there clearly is some tennis fandom and detail and nerdery in the creation of it. It is, you know, a steamy psychosexual love triangle drama with pounding Trent Reznor music. Like,
yes.
That's what it is. And get away from the tennis part. Like, there is a conscious, it amused me, you know, the gratuitousness of certain parts of this movie. There's just a conscious choice for like every scene. I'm like, okay, but how could they be more naked? Okay, wait, okay. So like, if it's like a changeover, they're gonna take off their shirts every time. They just sort of lay back like they're tanning, you know, because it was funny. It was like, why not? Like, tarps off, boys. Let's just get the, you know, get the tanning going every time. And like, oh, well, there's an argument between the two male leads. Okay, that's good. That's good. Argument's good, but it should be in a sauna. And they should be barely wearing towels. Like, these sort of, I've never heard of a tennis player doing saunas mid-tournament, but I guess it's much sexier to them than an ice bath would be. You know, or there's like, let's have another argument where they're, you know, in the cafeteria and they're like suggestively eating churros. Like, okay.
The churro eating was delightful,
you know. And there's also this, like, I haven't watched Euphoria, which is obviously Zendaya's most famous project, I think, probably, or no, that's not true, but one of her bigger projects before this, and it does have what I have gleaned from that show, and sort of, I guess, sort of Guadagnino-ish or other sort of HBO prestige kind of things, which is just sort of like ambient male frontal nudity of extras, which I feel like is just a thing that happens. Like, there's just, again, sort of copious nudity there. I got a tweet from someone who is sort of bashing the movie, and I said we're doing this podcast, who was like saying like, oh, Zendaya looks like a slut, it's bad women's tennis. Like, first of all, no, the men are the sluts in this movie, very clearly. And number two, there's not that much women's tennis in the movie. Actually, another thing I will mention, it's a men's tennis movie, and there's like a little bit, there's a female character who occasionally plays tennis, but it's a men's tennis, men's tour movie. This is not a WTA movie. I actually noticed the WTA logo doesn't appear in it. Like, I'm not sure they even went to the WTA. They never showed WTA match.
Yeah, no, this is, the boys are definitely, like, the guys' tennis is definitely the most central here. And, like, yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, it's a sexy film. Like, the whole point of the film is that it's this love triangle. And, like, I think it's a really great performance from Zendaya actually as this kind of object of affection at the center of it. I'm a big fan of Zendaya. I've watched a lot of her movie. I really enjoyed her in Dune 2 recently, and this is a very different performance than she's giving there. I found this to be kind of her most mature performance that she's given so far. She does stuff in this that I didn't know she could do. And like, I think for me, this was like further proof that she's kind of like the movie star, you know, like she is really kind of one of Hollywood's great hopes. I feel like as somebody who's like a genuine star, which they haven't had necessarily all the time. So I found her really great in this movie.
I've also, you mentioned Mike Feist earlier as a dancer, and he was obviously in West Side Story. I think he's amazing in this movie. I also love that he's a ginger in this time of ginger tennis supremacy with Yannick Sinner flying up the rankings. I think that's a really important representation for my people. I thought that he was, yeah, a really good part of this. And he's definitely, I think, the least famous of these three people. People will know Josh O'Connor for more stuff. He was on The Crown. But Mike Feist, I think I'd only known him from West Side Story, but I thought he was wonderful and like interesting looking and just great.
I really liked actually how the personas were kind of swapped in this. So like, if you know Mike Feist from West Side Story and you know Josh O'Connor from The Crown, like, you know that Mike Feist in West Side Story is this very kind of boisterous, you know, big, loud character. Josh O'Connor as Prince Charles is very like reserved, quiet. He's actually in another movie that's out right now, which is very good, called Black Chimera, where again, he's very kind of reserved. It's mostly just him walking around the Mediterranean in one beautiful suit. It's a very good film. And they actually swap these personas in this film. You know, Josh O'Connor is the bigger, louder, more aggressive one. Mike Feist is kind of the quieter, more stoic character. And so like, I really liked that they played with those personas, and they both did an amazing job. Like, I think I've heard Josh O'Connor actually talk a little bit about how he had to be pushed to be bigger, because it's just like he's not actually that big a personality, and he did a really good job. I think they both played these characters very well. I think all three of them were just giving like excellent performances that will really prove like that they should be hopefully here to stay in Hollywood, because it was very impressive.
Totally. This movie was originally planned to come out late last year and got delayed because of actor strike, because they came promo, and they're obviously doing a lot of promo for this movie all around the world. You know, Zendaya flying around with her various Law Roach tennis outfits on red carpets, which has been a big talking point, giving shout outs to Coco Gauff. So that's part of, I mentioned that just to cue up to you in terms of their acting careers. Do you think this movie can and should get some Oscar love for anything in here? I feel like if it had come out in Oscar season, very much so, but we don't, it's, I feel like Oscars feel so intentionally aimed for these days with the Oscar season, with the sort of promo for, this is a April movie release. You're leaning back and thinking very carefully, which I appreciate that you take this question very seriously.
Yeah, I'm running through categories in my head.
I think that certainly I could see Zendaya getting one for her. Here, I could see certainly the original screenplay, I think it's very strong for this movie from Justin Kariski's. I could see, you know, in a 10 picture year, 10 best picture nominees, like this, I'm guessing will be one of my 10 favorite movies of the year. Like, I could see, obviously I'm biased a bit towards tennis, but you know, it comes from established names who are doing a credible thing. And you know, King Richard got nominated. And so I would be rooting for this movie come awards season.
Yeah, I would be as well. I actually don't really see it happening. I think maybe the Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross soundtrack, and maybe I'm biased because I just loved it, but I think that soundtrack could maybe be nominated, although that's always a tough category. I kind of feel like by the time the Oscars come around, they'll have forgotten about this one, and I do kind of think that the Oscars aren't really super into this kind of psychosexual like thriller kind of thing. I think this will be a big popular hit in the way that Saltburn was, and I think that this is better than Saltburn, but I'm not sure if the Academy will go for it. I think this is better than King Richard, but King Richard is Oscar bait, you know, like King Richard is very like biopic kind of thing that the Oscars like. My answer is basically that I would love it if it did, but there's still a lot of year left, and I think that especially in those acting categories where it's not 10 nominees, I can see Zendaya being boxed out, and I feel like they may save her award for another year. I mean, honestly, they're stupid if they don't, because it, I mean, just for viewership reasons, like, nominate Zendaya for your awards, damn it. Like, get people to watch the awards. But like, I don't know if they'll go for it. But I mean, I would throw a vote their way if I were able.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you're right. I think Saltburn is an interesting, I've not seen Saltburn yet still, but I think it's an interesting analog because it's like, it has similar kind of, from what I know of Saltburn, like kind of like camp elements, you know, the homoeroticism there.
Yeah,
and it's also like young, you know, pretty people doing things.
Yeah, it's not as strong as this, and Saltburn doesn't really have, it's unclear what Saltburn is really about, but it's definitely kind of edgelordy in a way that I don't feel like this one is. Like, I feel like this one actually has a lot more to say and a lot more kind of development of the characters than Saltburn did, but it's all kind of a piece of this current nostalgia for, you know, movies like Talented Mr. Ripley or Cruel Intentions, those kind of 90s, noughties kind of sexual dramas, basically. And we're seeing a lot of those come back. And I think this is kind of a piece of that nostalgia.
Which I think is great. I think that's great. And I think that like so much of, and I've seen this already with some of the reactions online to this movie or to other, you know, I think so much of the culture, certain parts of online culture have gotten very prudish in a certain way. And a movie that's just here to be sexy is nice, you know, and that doesn't have to, especially because it's fictional. We get to say that about a fictional thing. It's not like we're unwillingly sexualizing, you know, any other real tennis players who don't want that. Although God knows fans do that anyway. All of them. but yeah, but it's this interesting, fascinating sort of way to reinvigorate movies and to have just make tennis fun again. Like, I do think this movie fits into the sort of like Morgan Riddle sort of like, let's make tennis cool again thing. Like, this movie shows like tennis as not necessarily aspirational. I don't think this is a movie that's gonna, you know, increase people wanting to go play tennis really, but it does sort of, I think, tennis as an aesthetic. Tennis is like, especially what Zendaya is doing again with her stylist Law Roach on these red carpets. Like, I do think it sort of makes it cool again, makes it sexy again in this way that it's always the sort of, which it can be abstractly, but I think it's a more feature full presentation of that side of tennis, which is a huge part of tennis and always has been.
Right. And I don't know if real tennis can live up to what Challengers is promising, but I think that It does set that tone. And like, yeah, there is this conversation about how, like, and I'm doing quotation marks here, like, Gen Z are like puritanical and stuff. But then like the biggest Gen Z show is Euphoria, which is anything but, you know, puritanical. So I think that there is actually this movement towards like sexier films again, sex being on screen a bit more often, because there has been this backlash to sex scenes. And I think that it's like really healthy that filmmakers are being like, no, like, there's nothing wrong with having sex on screen. People are totally fine with like absurd violence. So like, why are people mad about sex? Like, surely this is a better thing than shooting somebody up. So I don't know. Like, I think it's healthy to have this kind of film kind of coming back. And I think tennis is a really good setting for it. So why not?
Yeah. I want to mention also Breakpoint, which we talked about in the last show, the demise of Breakpoint, the Netflix show. Mm-hmm. Breakpoint went away from these possible elements of like soap opera stuff very early on. I remember thinking in the first two episodes of season one, the first episode they showed was about Nick Kyrgios, and the second one was about Ayla Tomjanovich and her new boyfriend, never mentioning that Nick and Ayla dated for years, like never trying to do, which is public record. That's like real knowledge and like can be used if there was there wasn't natural overlap between them really meaningfully in their careers. And I can see people seem like, oh, that's not part of her story now or whatever, don't make it out to be just that. But like, there are these interconnectednesses, these personal tensions and relationships and dramas are there in tennis. And God knows people who follow tennis, you know, men's and women's, will have all sorts of personal stakes that are on court and ratcheting up the personal stakes of any sorts of matches. I mean, certainly there are matches in women's tennis, singles and doubles, between players who are dating, have dated, broke up, or with someone new, or with their new partner. Like, there are definitely stories of doubles matches where like an ex is playing against her ex-girlfriend and the new girlfriend. Like, that has happened in women's tennis and WTA in the past. Like, hell, even men's tennis. I'm gonna try to redact these names to protect the innocent here, but I know there's a case of like, you know, two tennis players who you've heard of, who listeners will know very well, who are like well-known tennis players, and one of their fiancés or girlfriends or wives, I don't forget where the relationship was at this point, like cheated on them with this other top tennis player. And I don't know if these two have played each other since then, I'm not sure, but like, they're both active on tour and in the same world, and like, people know. If I know, people know in this world, and like, these sort of things can happen, right? And so like, I guess there's like, that's part of why open Andre Agassi's book was so successful because it did sort of pull back the curtain on some of this, not all of it certainly, but some of this sort of stakes and messiness that comes when you put all these human beings together in this high stakes pressure,
that's exactly,
you know, mixed gender environment. And I really think that tennis, that's one of the things that is scintillating and intriguing about tennis at certain points, and is, you know, left out so much of the coverage for obvious sort of gossipy, high-minded reasons at times. But even like Breakpoint could have, when they didn't draw the line between Nick and Isla, just even for continuity between episodes, I was like, what are you have this opportunity here. Like, what are you censoring this from and making it more sterile?
Yeah. There's no way these people are as boring as Breakpoint made them seem.
Exactly.
Right?
So exactly.
Like Breakpoint, I mean, and this does not happen with like Drive to Survive or with Full Swing, where you get kind of like more of the meat of kind of some of the personal relationships, some of the personal stakes, and then Breakpoint really just like failed to capture any of that. And maybe, you know, like the players were holding back and didn't want to talk about it. I think there is a culture of kind of silence in tennis and of not sharing, but like these are real people and there are real things happening behind the scenes. And, you know, if you get to see just a little bit of that, it really helps. Like it really helps fans get to know the players a little bit more and get to understand what's driving them. And like, I don't think that we should have access to everything, especially people's like personal sex lives and things, but like,
yeah,
I think it's nice to, I think what Challengers was a really refreshing reminder of is that like, these people have private lives. Like these people, yes, have private lives and they are all thrown together all the time in a work environment, but also in a very like passionate environment naturally that like is going to apply different pressures and different feelings. And I kind of enjoyed that reminder. It kind of made, I left Challengers excited to watch tennis again, you know, like, mm-hmm, I left Challengers feeling like, oh yes, this has captured like what it is about the energy of tennis, which is sometimes unwieldy, which I think is reflected in this film, but like it reminded me of that energy, so that was really exciting.
I totally agree with that. And I think it did it so much better than Breakpoint. That's the thing. I think the biggest barrier of Breakpoint is I don't think Breakpoint did anything to make people want to watch more tennis.
Breakpoint has one good scene. One good scene, which is the scene when Casper Ruud is standing with Nadal before their final. And like that is the only moment in that whole show where I actually was watching what I felt like was some real personality and state, like this terrified guy standing next to Nadal. And other than that, they just failed to capture anything. And then that was very frustrating.
Totally. Totally agree with that. Yeah, would love to see more. I know there's other tennis documentaries in the works currently and stuff like that. I hope that they're all better. I think Breakpoint was actually uniquely bad. It's just sad that it was this like such a high profile moment for the sport that was such a failure. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that before, but I still do rue that and mourn that in a certain way. Because there are ways to make something like a Challengers version of Casper Ruud. It's probably the wrong person to pick, but not, you know, you could do things to, and obviously Casper Ruud would have to agree to this in this way that I think tennis players are trained not to ever. And obviously, like, you know, what we're seeing in Challengers, this is the interior lives of these people. These are public figures, especially the more famous one of the players who's not, you know, all his internal messinesses are not being broadcast on ESPN or to viewers, but they have this internal thing going. I think the tennis players can do a better job. Hopefully tennis players watch this and are like, you know what, let me just sort of be a little bit more honest with stuff. That's why tennis writers, I think, for example, or media are so drawn to people who do sort of like break that wall. They do sort of like people like, you know, Bublik, for example, like I know we had on the show at least once on NCR, who just like are willing to say the thing out loud, right? Who are like, and obviously Bublik comes with various, you know, parts of his personality that are problematic and actions he does. And it makes him, he's definitely, which is also probably why he's more inclined to sort of rock the boat. I don't know why he can't deny it first. There's certainly other players like this. So people who are willing to sort of, call it the elephant in the room, say what's actually happening, be a bit more real, because there is so much of holding that back. And you're right. Tennis players are not as boring as Breakpoint made them out to be. Players did not help by actually like giving Breakpoint, I think, tons to work with, but also Breakpoint really tried to go for a specific kind of depiction, which just was not good. So,
and this is kind of why I felt like Challengers was more real than any of the biopics that we've kind of been delivered before, which is like, yes, it's elevated reality. Like, obviously, this is like a very kind of camp sexual thriller and like, or at least like a psychodrama. And so, like, it's all elevated, of course. It's a movie, it's supposed to be. But like, I did feel like it did a much better job at sharing like some of the truths of the inner lives of these people. Yeah. In a way that I just haven't seen on screen in those kind of like traditional biopics. So it was just a really refreshing glimpse into things. And I really liked that.
I really agree too. I think in the biopics often you get tripped up with like accuracy and like, then you kind of really do get to nitpick certain things. Like I remember in the King Richard movie with Venus Williams, his first tournament being like, oh, why is this tournament being outdoors? And it was actually indoors. Like, this, like, they played both matches on the same court. Why are they changing that? You know, and like, those are fair critiques for a historical enactment movie, but also like not really important to a movie, as a successful movie or not. And so the Challengers did throw away that. It made me more excited for fiction. Like, I like tennis fiction does exist already out there. Like, I know Racket, which we both contributed for a long time, did run, you know, short stories about tennis thereabouts. There's a novel which was successful, which I've never read actually, called Carrie Soto Is Back, which was a sort of, I think, largely based on Serena, but like it was a novel. I'm sure some listeners have read that. There's a couple other books like that as well about that. And maybe just more excited for that as an element of tennis storytelling, right? Because I do think you and I both love movies. You know, there's a lot to be accomplished in movies, and the sort of truth in art can be a lot more true than the truth in journalism or, you know, history, in certain kinds of truth. Certain kinds of emotional, personal truths can come through more clearly when you're not fully bound by what actually happened. Can we switch to doing the spoiler chat now?
A couple of things
to mention. Okay, this is big alert. This is for people. You should not listen to this part before you have seen the movie, I think, fair to say. If you want to see this movie, about things that I think will sort of give away too much of different scenes or plot points or stuff. So big alert here. Stop, stop, stop. I'll put a little music sound here too.
I was gonna say we need a siren or something.
Yeah, to play. Also, I've done Britney Spears saying "stop" before, like from the. Okay. So here's Britney.
Stop.
Thank you, Britney. And so here we are talking with spoilers again. Do not listen to this if you have not seen the movie yet. Okay. See, I cut you off earlier and started talking about the sex scenes. I actually think this was like notable to me. This movie doesn't actually have much at all actual like sex. There's a lot of like making out that ends at making out, including this big scene. It's like this big threesome scene. To me, this feels like a spoiler because there's a twist to me in this scene that they did not actually consummate any of this making out in this scene. And there's like a funny thing where Josh smacks the boner away afterwards.
Yeah.
Little detail that I caught.
Felt by everybody in it. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
it's steamy and it's like sexy, but there's actually not a lot of, you know, fornication.
I feel like tennis is kind of the stand-in, you know?
Like, yeah.
Like a lot of the biggest like passion comes out like on the court quite pivotally towards the end of the film. And so like that's kind of and there are suggestions of people having hooked up, like and again that's kind of, you know, there are key plot points to kind of deal with, like who slept with who and when and at what tournaments and all this kind of thing. But no, you never actually see any sex on screen. We kind of come close. There is a lot of sweat in this movie,
skin
and like sweat dripping onto the camera, like it's hitting you, like it's definitely suggestive. But yeah, no, never actually an explicit sex scene, which I thought was like a really interesting choice and actually worked really well.
I was surprised by that.
Yeah, not to sound like kind of like, you know, the puritanical online people, but it wasn't needed actually. They did like a really great job of kind of teasing it enough that it just felt like a very sexy, flirtatious movie. And it still felt explicit, even though it wasn't.
Yeah, I agree. I did think the thing of having just naked extras around, which is sort of like, I kind of rolled my eyes a bit, honestly. I was like, sort of like, is this necessary? I felt like a trope of modern, or like the new edgy thing to do is like male frontal nudity in movies or TV. And it just feels, I don't know. I'm not trying to demean these brave men or their genitals, but I just think that it's like a little bit like, okay, like some like non-character walking around naked to sort of like shock the audience. I felt it was a little bit, you know, tired in that way. And just, I did not add anything that honestly, plot wise, but you know, not going to tell you not to enjoy it if you want to. The other thing that I wanted to say, which is, again, I'm not even going to any real like plot spoilers, like how the movie ends even really. Except for to say that there's this wild sequence in the final point of the match, and I really want to have to set it up and have Mike Cation, Challenger commentator to the stars, overdub it, give like live shot by shot commentary on what's happening on screen in this moment, and like including with the serve and signal and stuff. Like I want him to like sort of like be talk, like do, I'll write a script and have him do. I think it'd be great. But the one part that also bugged me that felt like the worst parts of the Wimbledon movie in terms of accuracy to me was the stuff about the night before the US Open junior finals, when the boys are going to play each other in the junior final and they go to this party somewhere out on Long Island and are like drinking and smoking. And to me, and like romancing and carousing and stuff. And to me, this felt like the worst parts of the Wimbledon movie, the most real, unrealistic parts of the Wimbledon movie, like trying to insert romantic sequences and action and plot points that way into the middle of a grand, crucial end parts of a grand slam. Like, I'm sorry, this just does not happen. You are not going to be the night before a grand slam junior final out at some distant party, you know, drinking and smoking. It just doesn't happen. Also, like, you're American players at the US Open. Where are your parents? Like, right. You're not going to be completely on your own at the US Open as an American. And also, you know, this was also presented as Tashi, the Zendaya character, being this big star, having like Adidas posted for her everywhere. You're not getting all the sponsor attention if you're not a pro. You don't get Adidas posters and then go to Stanford. You've turned pro at that point. So that to me was the scene that rang the most. Like, this is not real. Like, this does not work.
Yeah, I mean, it still worked for me as like a film, but you're right. It didn't.
My tennis brain was screaming the loudest during that scene.
Yeah. But no, like, it wouldn't be realistic that they would be at that party. And I agree with you. I kind of felt like almost what they were doing with Tashi was kind of like the Laura Robson winning Junior Wimbledon treatment, who actually did kind of become a big star from that.
Yeah.
So I kind of felt like, and obviously Laura's career was ended quite similarly to Tashi's. So like I felt like that was the nearest real life comparison, actually, in terms of like junior stardom in that way. And like, yes, it's, you know, slightly different because the British press can be a bit like psychotic given any small inch compared to the US press. I think the US would probably want more than just a junior title. But yeah, it was funny to see her getting that much attention. I did actually really like some stuff to do with kind of fame and things like, I really enjoyed that Art, Mike Feist's character, was sponsored by Uniqlo and On. I thought that was very, I was like, oh, he's got the trendy like sponsorships that we have more recently, which I thought was really good.
The apparel was really good actually in this movie too.
The apparel was really smart. So yeah. I kind of forgave the shocking kind of Adidas sponsorship. A thing that really bothered me in terms of accuracy, the only tennis thing that really took me out of it was the code violation structures.
They screwed it up.
They said point penalty instead of
twice
game penalty.
Exactly. Yes. But it's interesting. The scoreboard shows game.
But the
umpire said point, which seems very fixable. There's also one other scene where there's a scene that's quote unquote taking place in Atlanta. They filmed on court 17 at the US Open, and one backdrop of the court they put Atlanta logos on, but the other backdrop still shows US Open stuff. That was sloppy to me. And then also with the scoreboard in the match, there were times when like the server was marked wrong. Like the dot was on the wrong person on the score bug, which is like, these are like small things, but for me, as again, these are like tennis nerd things that could trip somebody up and take them out.
Yeah, I think the problem for me with the
that umpire was such a choice. I didn't like, it was such a distracting choice to me. I think it was fine, but it was sort of like, this was like a performance from someone of not much was required of this person.
I actually enjoyed kind of like that energy that was happening with the umpire. I thought that was very funny.
I mean, some umpires certainly are peacocks, you know, in their own way.
I mean, like, listen, I think I've kind of made it clear that I don't really care about like tennis like imperfections and stuff, but the only reason the point penalty, game penalty thing bothered me was because it was kind of essential to what was happening on screen. And like, even as somebody who knows tennis, I suddenly became quite confused by the scoreboard and like where we were in the set.
Yeah.
And so I felt like for a casual, like, maybe they would be confused, or maybe they just wouldn't care and it would just go over their head. I don't know. But that was the bit that really bothered me. The other thing that I found very funny was like the intense like category 5 hurricane that was hitting New Rochelle.
In the drama. This was so over the top. It's like, this was, again, this was camp to me. It was like, okay, yes. Something turbulent is happening here. Windstorm, everything is blowing around. Sudden like tornado warnings out of nowhere. Also, New Rochelle, speaking of New Rochelle not being tornado or hurricane zone, New Rochelle also doesn't have a Ritz-Carlton.
Right.
I mean, what are we doing here?
So, right.
This imagined world of the Ritz-Carlton, New Rochelle.
The hurricane was so strong in New York. I was like, is something going to fall on Josh O'Connor and kill? Like, what is the twist?
There was this big post. I thought this big poster of the two of them was going to blow down.
I thought that was going to tear, like, to kind of represent that. I thought something was going to happen with that, but no, it was just windy. Like, we just decided to have it be windy. It was wild how strong that wind was. I was really laughing at that whole situation.
That was funny. I also thought that it was funny, what I was going to say, where... One thing I didn't get also just thinking the poster is why Zendaya was on the poster as a coach. Like,
yeah, she's pitched as this like star coach. Like, she's still like, she won Junior US Open and was like a huge star. She tore her knee to shreds at Stanford, couldn't play tennis anymore, but for some reason is still like famous. This huge, famous.
That part didn't
star.
That make sense to me.
And I guess like just because of her personality, like, but yeah, that didn't make total
movie.
Sense.
It's a movie.
Yeah, it's a movie. Yeah. It's fine. A couple of things that took me out of it as well was like, I didn't really enjoy the Spider-Man reference. Like, I don't need like an in-joke about Zendaya being in Spider-Man,
I didn't even catch that.
Okay, yeah. There was like a really explicit Spider-Man reference, which like drew kind of laughs/groans at the screening I was in. And I was like, oh, don't do that to Zendaya. Like, we don't need to like kind of reflect on that.
When was that? Tell me. I don't even remember what that was.
Oh yeah, the daughter says, when can I watch Spider-Verse?
Okay.
When they're rewatching his match. And so it just was this annoying thing. And the other small thing was the take care of my little white boys line, which is from the trailer, which I think has kind of become kind of a viral kind of piece of the film's marketing. The line actually felt really out of place in the film. Like, that's not how Zendaya speaks. That's not how Tashi speaks like throughout the film. And then when she delivered it, it kind of felt really out of place to me. And maybe it's just because I've seen it memed so much, but I don't know, that kind of fell into like more of a kind of cheesy, naughty, like domestic thriller, like what's that one with Beyonce, like Obsessed or something. Like, it didn't really work for me within the context of this movie. So those were the only two things that really took me out.
I did like that Tashi was like mean. Like, right off the bat, she's like, bullying people. I really enjoyed that,
yeah.
I gotta say.
Yeah. I also really enjoyed that the girl that she absolutely destroyed in juniors, you then see that she's gone on to win majors while Tashi hasn't been able to play.
That's funny thing. I don't know if you caught this, but they're like, there's a TV in the background. They sort of show a blurry picture of her holding the Wimbledon trophy, and it is very clearly a blurry photo of Petra Kvitova.
Oh, perfect.
Yes. I loved that. I was like, I have seen this pose. That is a Kvitova trophy photo. I know that photo. Yes. But that was great.
So one last thing that like really hit me as like not working was I really wish they hadn't made Patrick's background kind of a background of wealth, because there is this whole discussion in the film about, you know, Patrick being poor and having to sleep in his car and needing the money from the challenger. So thinking about throwing the first round so that he can just get the first round money, and all this kind of stuff. And so like, it means so much more to him, not just for like personal vengeance, but also financially to win this challenger and lift his ranking and all this kind of stuff, compared to Art, who just like needs to win it to not be humiliated. I then kind of found it annoying that Patrick like is just ignoring his family wealth and like trying to live without it. I actually think it would have been much more interesting to just have him not be wealthy. I think that those stakes were kind of, I mean, it's a character beat, right? It's another thing about his arrogance and stuff, but I actually really liked this comparison between where they were both coming from. And I think it would have been more kind of interesting to real life as well to have this character be financially struggling in reality. You know,
honestly, I didn't even pick up on like his family background. That was like a detail that I didn't register with me. So that's a very detailed reading by you there. I'm impressed by that. One thing I did like that these two kids who grew up in an academy, to sort of, they call it boarding school, but a tennis academy, were like rough around the edges and were like smoking and drinking in their teens. Like that stuff is, the smoking I'm less sure of, but certainly the drinking of like being just unsupervised as a child and it leading to weird developments is very real in tennis. And certainly that was talked about a lot, like in circuit Jennifer Capriati in the 90s. And you know, I don't know about the current state of all academies, so I'm sure some parts of it persist, like that it's not a great place to become a well-developed person or adult or mature in that certain kind of way, pick up bad habits. I thought that was good. I on the part about the money, the movie sort of starts with him like being like sort of homeless, like he's sleeping in his car. I don't think actually at the challenge, I think at the challenge level, they're pretty good at providing hospitality usually. And then also having like host families, like they would not let a challenger player like, and he would have a network to tap into. But again, this is a movie showing the stakes of it. There certainly are players who have traveled sleeping in cars or certainly traveled around like, you know, in camper vans or something. Like, and Dustin Brown has talked about doing this in Germany, like driving around from tournament to tournament and in some sort of van or something like that.
There's so much talk in this film as well, like in these less big matches and these challenger and junior events. There's so much talk, especially between Art and Patrick, about like just throwing matches and like deciding beforehand who's going to win. So like, I mean, and this is why we're in the spoiler section, but like the initial agreement is that Art will just win the final because Patrick doesn't want it because he sees it as cursed, but he doesn't want to win the juniors. So I mean, that's maybe another reason why they're just drinking and smoking, because they've already decided who's going to win because Patrick doesn't want it. And then of course Zendaya lays down this gauntlet of whoever wins gets my phone number, so then it becomes a competitive match. And then later at the challenger, the administrator of the challenger tournament is the one who suggests to Patrick that he throw the first match so that she can give him the check.
No, I thought he suggests.
No, she
mentions the possibility. She's like, you could always
lose today. You could always just lose, and then I can give you. And then we'd have to give you the check today. And I was like, oh, this is so like the casual way they're kind of talking about throwing these matches is like really interesting. And I'm not.
And I will say, not totally, not like that explicitly usually, but certainly people talk about checking out of tournaments mentally, certainly in doubles. If you're a singles player and you want to get to the next city and don't want to be hanging around stuck in the doubles draw, if you're a top singles player, yeah, like you will make it kind of obvious that you're not there to win the doubles, you know, and then lose swiftly the next time with some degree of apologeticness if your partner is a double specialist or something. But yeah, like that part felt real to me, actually, the sort of like mix of it. And also, like I said before about the stakes, I do think like matches feeling bigger than they really are, especially for Art, I guess, who was still since you're a top 100 player, presumably.
Right.
Yeah, felt real. So anyway, and there's a couple other like way too spoiler, even too spoiler for this part stuff that I'm gonna mention to you after we stop. But thank you for being here, Andrew. This was lovely having you.
Thank you for having me.
I hope people go through this movie. You've written about the movie. You've heard that?
Yes. I have a piece that just came out today, Friday. I'll post it on social, but it's a piece about how bodies are portrayed in this movie and the tennis body. And that's in the secondserve.com. So I will share links to that on my socials, which is AJ Eccles.
We'll put it in the notes of the show as well. We'll link to it.
Great.
Thank you very much. Lovely to see you here. Hopefully you enjoy the movie. Let us know what you think. We might do some follow-up content with someone from the production of the movie, TBD. We're waiting on that ask. So we'll let you know. And that's all for now. Bye, folks. Say bye.
Oh, bye.